Welcome today to our interview series with Outstanding Professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Richard Longworth, disruptive thinker, educator, community advocate, website developer, writer, and blogger. Richard, thank you for coming in today and sharing your many deep experiences with our audience.
Thank you, Stephen, for the opportunity and including me as an interviewer in your podcast. Well, over the years, I've certainly followed your career and been impressed with all of your achievements and accomplishments, and I certainly look forward to the interview today. Indeed, it's a pleasure and an honor to be your guest, and I look forward to being a part of this podcast.
Richard, you're one of the most innovative thinkers I've ever come across and know. So, and you've done so many things. You've had so many successes. So can you profile some of them and the lessons learned?
Very good, Steve. Excellent question. And of course, I tend and hope to think of myself as an innovator and a creative thinker, notwithstanding, just preliminary information. Everybody can be a creator and an innovator. All you have to do is really think outside of the box. But there's been a common thread throughout all of my successful achievements. My major was in mathematics, and I've always been probing or researching and trying to find answers to difficult questions. I certainly welcomed challenges, and when faced with intriguing problems, I immersed myself in discovering solutions, again, part of the creative, innovative process that I believe I go through. I guess you might say that, though, I'm like a dog with a bone. Whenever I have a problem, whenever I have a question, I just go at it fully. I sort of bite into it. I'm tenacious. I'm intense. And let's look at some of the successes and some of the things that certainly have happened in my life. One of the notable ones that I'd like to speak on is engaging some of my students, or a number of my students at Capilano University. And in particular, one of the successes was the bookstore ordering system that it took them far beyond the textbook learning, the normal way of learning. The outcome was very gratifying, as students obtained, and the result was they won the Canadian Innovators of Tomorrow Award. And it was a prestigious award and one recognized nationally. Many lessons certainly was learned through the teamwork aspect, frustration and perseverance that I saw in my students and certainly myself, and something that I believe the students took away with them in creating a successful design. Perhaps I can highlight another success and draw some lessons out of it for you, Steve. And one of these was a project that arose from a request to use the internet more effectively in a classroom. And it was at the K-12 level. And what we did was match students' search for information with the individual learning style and appropriate reading level. Now, again, this is an early grade question, is how to use the internet effectively and how to provide information on a reading level and a learning style. And the request led to the creation of a learning knowledge framework based on a Dublin Core taxonomy, which, in fact, I believe was a precursor. This is going back to early 2000, was a precursor to folksonomy and the semantic web of today. The design, the development, and installation of this framework was actually selected as a presentation at the IFIP 2002 World Congress that was held in Montreal. And I followed up with numerous presentations to education ministers in both British Columbia and Ontario. It was a wonderful success, and certainly the credibility and recognition was nationally across Canada. Now, some of my other successes came out of my work at Cap College before it became Cap University. And at the time of Cap College days, I was chair of a number of committees. There's two in particular that stand out in my mind: the five-year strategic planning committee and the provincial planning committee on prior learning assessment, PLA. Now, this is the one I'll address. Both were significant committees, and I'll comment on the PLA. Now, first of all, perhaps a bit of an explanation to your audience. PLA is an awarding college credit for prior learning from work and life experiences. The main advantage of obtaining PLA credits is to retain and graduate more adult learners. the province, particularly the ours, British Columbia, where I lived at the time, found that life experiences can be adjudicated and given recognition. For example, a business executive who has no college credits shouldn't have to take an entry-level business course. It just wouldn't make sense at all. Now, my knowledge of statistics and systems analysis and database design was certainly invaluable to the committee, as a lot of data and statistical analysis was required. Now, we used various tools such as Excel and SAS. Data mining and profiling were applied. And I found that the skills in multiple disciplines and a broad-based knowledge are certainly invaluable in most careers, not just from an innovation creative point of view, but I guess the eclectic aspect and the Renaissance man has certainly come to the forefront again. Now, PLA was about collaboration and decision-making, intelligent planning, asset mapping, and revitalization and building of IT models. Now, this skill set I acquired from PLA, I believe, it certainly gave me a heads up, but it's been proven to be most useful in certainly my recent work on what we're going to discuss is collaborative communities. Now, all through, I guess I've learned many, many lessons, and they've been varied depending on my career, and my career has been a programmer, a systems analyst, a database designer, educator, and a youth leader, and they've been numerous and most significant. But what I believe is that creative ideas really can only be realized through determination, hard work, and passion. Being innovative certainly requires a full commitment and all-or-nothing approach. Let it be said that not all my passions have been work-related, though one in particular has been inspired by my daily encounters with not only my colleagues and students, but also with my family members and friends and casual acquaintances. Upon my retirement, I felt a need to share the secret of my positive interactions both in and out of the classroom. And here began my encounter with book writing. I felt I had a story to share and set about recording my reflections on life issues. And my first publication was Turning the Self Inside Out. It takes the reader on an inner journey to unlock the essence of their being and helps them to make personal changes that will enable them to gain a happier, more productive, and hopefully more meaningful life. This publication, Steve, was followed by my second book, Reflections on Life Issues. It's the hope that the lessons learned will become a sort of a positive catalyst for change through discovery and transformation of the self from simply being who they are into what they were always meant to be, and that's certainly been my mantra with my students. It's nice to know what you can do, but have you found out what you really are meant to be? So where am I now? Certainly enjoying my retirement, but I'm still journeying onto new adventures, and even in my later years, I find that stopping is not a word I use. Continuing and interest and knowledge and probing and finding is certainly important to me. I now consult and advise in IT. I design and install websites. And recently, I've created the first fully ever collaborative community website, and hopefully we can go into some detail on that a little bit later. What's the lesson I learned? That we should really continue to develop interests and never stop learning and doing what we believe in and take the time to discover a way to give back. And this is the time for me now to start giving back, particularly on a community basis. Much joy I find and satisfaction I certainly derive from being involved and productive. And certainly that's that highlights some of the successes and the lessons I have learned, and particularly recently.
You know, it's interesting, Richard, your work has definitely shaped the country and internationally, and of course has had impact in the many communities that you've resided in, including here in the Vancouver region. And I know your students considered you one of the best teachers of all time or professors of all time. You gave back so much, and I remember talking to some of the students saying that you were really their favorite. Because of how you spent time in ensuring that they learned the lessons well and were able to apply them. So, in fact, you even took the university, then the college, as being one of the first KIPPS-accredited schools in the country, and you led that effort too. So you've done a lot, KIPPS being the Canadian Information Processing Society, and of course they have this accreditation program where they check the curriculum and the students and the faculty and the programs, and then accredit that program, and of course you led that effort. So just a remarkable background you have. Now, you know, we talked about your past work. What was the journey to your current work?
Well, first of all, initially, thank you so, so much for that credibility recognition. You know me well, Steve, and certainly I've been part of your life and my life in the past, but I do appreciate your comments. Thank you so, so much. You're so kind. So your question was, what was the journey of my current work? And presently, as you know, I'm living in Ottawa, in the nation's capital. And what's actually happened since I've been here? Well, I'm not teaching anymore. I'm not involved to the same extent that I was in education in British Columbia. But my involvement now really is around the community. How did this come about, and where is it leading? Oh, it's an interesting story. And the journey really began with some website development that I started in supporting my writings and the two published books. The earlier websites that I created when I first arrived in Ottawa back in 2011 was WordPress blogs, and this is how I got into website development. Admittedly, I knew about websites, certainly I use websites, but I wasn't a website designer nor a programmer. In my previous life, I worked at Pratt & Whitney Aircraft as a Fortran and COBOL programmer. But now, with my WordPress, I have to be involved with PHP and MySQL and certainly HTML. But when we moved, one of the first things that we decided was we were churchgoers in the past. However, more so as a youth leader. So we wanted to get involved with youth again, advising, helping, providing, but we joined the local church, and right away I recognized that there was a need for a newer, more comprehensive website. The website was an old website, probably written 12, 13, 14 years ago, and it certainly was out of date. Now somehow, and perhaps I advertised the fact, the minister found out that I did website development with my blogs, and certainly recognized the work that I did with the with my published books, and complimented it with the blogs. And she didn't really hesitate, asked me if we could rework the site design. It soon became apparent that our minister not only had really a good understanding of computers, but also a list of requests. Wow, quite a list of requests for the new website. So the website that I developed for the church is quite extensive. I think there's 40 separate web pages, and you can actually do all sorts of online aspects, including making donations, obviously, and so we use PayPal. Well, the mission was accomplished. It took probably 2-3 months, and I readily designed and installed the new site, and it met all of her criteria. And it's being currently maintained now by the minister and her assistant. So the idea was is that I sign off and that the administration control now can be done directly by the minister and her assistant. And since that time, since the first install, there's been a few changes, but very, very few. Now, it continued on after that because during the development of the church website, we sort of noticed there were a number of informational concerns in the community, notably. There was an outdated website. Not only the church was outdated, but the community website was outdated. Now, this is not Ottawa. This is Carp, Ontario, which is a small hamlet of 1,500 residents on the west side of Ottawa. So when I speak about a community website, I'm talking about a relatively small, not politically motivated or touristly type of a website, but a website about information generally on services in Carp. Now, the information spread across many, many sources, and for the most part, it was difficult in finding current information. Even some of the information was contradictory. There was a number of businesses and associations, of course, by the time, this is like going back to last August, so now I've been in Carp for 18 months, and they knew of me, and a few of the businesses and associations, and some of the associations is called Carp Connect, and the Carp BIA, so BIA is the Business Improvement Area. That's a big thing here in Ontario. they agreed it was time to rectify the situation. So what I undertook was a sort of initial analysis of their needs. So I spent 2 months periodically holding meetings and with some of the major stakeholders, and we discussed and identified what was needed with this new website. The list was long, but in summary, it was decided that a unique collaborative website was necessary. Now, we can go into some detail, but certainly as we go through the interview, I'll explain more fully what I mean by a collaborative website. Now, we continued, and ongoing discussions took place to ensure that once the initial design was finished, it would certainly meet with their approval, and it did. The acceptance on the completion of the initial design was unanimous. Now, since the first design, there's been suggested changes, and these changes, in actual fact, are to reflect the needs of the broader spectrum of users. But the hope and the plan is that we will continue working on this community website, and we found that it is quite unique based on the needs. It's a collaborative website, and it's a wiki-based website, and has all of the benefits of collaboration.
You know, that's just fascinating, this work on this collaborative website and community website. So let's mine this further. You know, what is the value of the work?
Good question, Steve. Yeah. I think we can sort of look at it from three perspectives. One is for the residents, and the second would be for the community. And it certainly has political and provincial implications as well. So let me just highlight those for you, Steve. For the residents, it's a sort of a one-stop community information center. So anything and everything that you need from the community, from an informational point of view, is there. Now, it's not information about outside of the community. It's not information about the councillor or the mayor. It's information that is primarily used by the residents of the community. Well, information needed by the community residences, you know, where's the local medical center, where's the best place to get hold of the police, when and how do we get, etc. So lots of questions, but we've sort of captured all of the informational requirements that the community needs, at least we feel that way. For the residents also, it has dynamic content. What is meant by that is we are not trying to create a website where, particularly myself, perhaps defined as a web administrator, has to intervene with the actual content. The content is posted by the residents. So it's wiki-based. It's a wiki environment, and it's directly posted by the user. So being a wiki platform, we're a little bit careful because what we've done with this wiki platform is make it a collaborative but democratic, an online democratic collaborative type of website. What do I mean by democratic? Well, gee, we've got to ensure that the users use it as a safety net, that we certainly don't impinge on other people's needs and wishes, and that it's open. So there is some sort of monitoring that's taking place. However, users can post, and usually within hours through volunteers, we check the content of the site to ensure that it's safe and ensure that it's democratic and it's based on the wishes and needs of the community. Now, also for the residents, we've included blogs and rankings and statistics to enable empowerment. And that's a big word that we've been using in the community is empowerment. We're empowering the residents of the community. So it's as if we're using a bottom-up approach. Too often in municipalities and community, it's a top-down approach, and residents don't get involved. It's hands-off. They're disinterested. The content is already provided. They're not part of the content. But in this particular case, it is bottom-up. Now, we've included polls to initiate new ideas. So a community resident puts in a suggestion or an idea, and I'll certainly discuss something called CARP dollars a little bit later on, local currency. And we poll it to see whether or not the community is interested in such an idea. Through it, we feel that the residents have gained stronger community connections and a sense of sharing and belonging. They feel now part that this is their website, done by them, for them, and certainly, as I said, is open, and they can subscribe and provide the content. So what does this website really include? Well, there's a platform for open discussion, a community notice board, there's a business directory, a list of all activities and social services are there, local travel information, things to do, including movies, including TV listings locally for here. Internet TV is also included in there. There's community alerts, and there's a forum for ideas and innovations, so we get BIA, Business Improvement Area, involved. And there's something new that's coming, not installed yet, but it's called an assets-based inventory. Now, this assets-based inventory is for small business and home businesses. And what we're trying to create is a inventory and be able to share that inventory with the community. For example, Stephen has a little repair shop he does from his home, and he repairs laptops. Wow. Gee, I need my laptop repaired. I just broke my screen. So I look at my assets-based inventory and find that locally I have Stephen on hand to be able to do that for me. So that sort of covers the resident side. On the community side, I believe these are some of the key features. Sustainability, new innovations, we provided decision-making tools, intelligent and what I like to call co-intelligence. So co-intelligence in that it's a Tom Attlee concept that perhaps your audience can have a look at, is that we're working together collaboratively to create co-intelligence. So is this intelligence planning, a useful information structure, and something called community engagement. Now, community engagement on the side, again, we're discussing communities, was first developed in Australia. And what they have in Australia is community developers, but also community engagers. So people who engage the community in community type of services and involvement. And certainly for the community, we have all sorts of linked resources, very valuable resources that we have on our website. So that sort of covers the community side of things. What effect is this nationally and provincially, Steve? Well, we're creating social capital. There's no doubt we're creating social capital, a new term perhaps, but certainly capital on a social level. And there's been revitalization and economic development that's occurred provincially and within our community. And that sort of covers the three aspects of the value I see with this website.
Richard, it's clear that there's a tremendous amount of value, as you indicated, in what's being created here. So I guess the other question then is, why should others get involved in this work?
Good question. Great. Why should other people get involved in this work? Well, first of all, I suppose the website is a unique design, and it's created to enhance and strengthen the interaction of the community residents. Now, at the moment, of course, I'm not suggesting that this website is for outside of the community. It's created by the community for the community. But the expectation is that the residents themselves will be contributors and users of the site. So again, we're looking at the community. And at the moment, it's specific to that individual community. But the anticipation is that in the future, neighborhoods around Ottawa will join. I've already been approached by two other communities. I'm a little bit hesitant because they are communities I'm hoping that you've heard of and perhaps our audience, particularly in Canada, has heard of. And one is Stittsville and the other one is Kanata. And the mayors of Kanata, and there's two of them, and the mayor of Stittsville has approached me and asked if I would try to implement and install a similar website in their areas. Now, the website that we developed is for small communities. It's not really for certainly Ottawa, Vancouver, Montreal, and it may not be appropriate for Stittsville and Kanata. I can go into some detail and explain that, but it was not created for large communities and large towns. It's for small towns, small hamlets, and municipalities. But eventually, I suppose, the scope will broaden and we will link with other communities in Ontario. In actual fact, how many hamlets and communities less than 10,000 people are there in Canada? There's over 2,500. Notably, the ones in Saskatchewan are so disparate and so spread out that certainly we need some cohesiveness, some sustainability, and some way of information and providing content for these small communities. I think this website can do that. Now, through the current website, and it's in the initial stages, expansion will occur in other small towns and municipalities, as I've mentioned. But what's important too and what we're working on is a French version of the site, and that's underway and will become available in 2014. So we're looking in expanding into Francophone areas. So we find, and already I've been asked by a group here in Ottawa that's interested in expanding the Francophone language throughout various communities, and that asked for some help with that. So we're looking at that at the moment. Now, the question, of course, is why should people get involved in this work? And I'd like to just go through a bit of a scenario with you, Stephen. Let's just consider for a moment the possibilities and the implication of this new website. Now, we're collecting statistics, we're collecting information, we're collecting resources, and one of them is called assets-based inventory, which I mentioned is small businesses and home-based industries. So, just looking at that one aspect of it, the community database certainly would capture content that could be shared to, I've got three scenarios. Well, let's say Janet needs a new dress, and Susan requires some babysitting this coming weekend. Now, Janet and Susan don't know one another, but contact is really made online through our site. Wow. So they don't know one another, but they have a need. They have a need in the community. And through going through our site, that need can be met, and each one of them has a skill or something that they can provide to the other person. The scenario that I mentioned before was Stephen's laptop business. Now, let's say Joe outside there has a faulty laptop and needs a replacement. There's another gal that, again, this is makeup, but I know has a home-based computer repair business, and both of them find each other in our assets inventory listing. Wow, what a provider that is. This idea of assets-based type of inventory, just a real key thing for the future of a website. And a third scenario is, well, let's look at David, who's a caregiver. He needs help with, say, upgrading his math skills. And Christine out there in the community is a retired math teacher who needs some bathroom repairs. No connection at the moment. But Pete is a handyman who sort of needs care for his ailing mother. Now, if we provide those three, and they're online and they're accessible, and their skill set is noted, we can certainly get them together. But listen to this, and this is a new innovation that's come out of one of our residents. There's a local community currency that we're working on. It's called CARP dollars. So the CARP dollars are traded in the community, and already we've approached the Bank of Nova Scotia, the only bank in CARP, and they're interested in providing a service, and that service is that one CARP dollar is worth 80 cents in government Canadian money. So you get a 20% discount right away if you trade CARP dollars. So with regards to David and Christine and Pete, they may not be able to trade off their skills, but they certainly can trade off CARP dollars for the work and services that are rendered. So in other words, we've made an exchange based on a local currency concept. So in all of that, and again, why should people get involved? Well, new relationships and connections are made to service one another within the community itself. And I believe this is definitely a new way of utilizing and sharing existing resources to revitalize and build a more comprehensive and cohesive community.
You know, it's just fascinating what you've been able to build. So what do you hope to accomplish this year?
It's really, really exciting, and of course, with each one of these innovations, you sometimes lose a little bit of sense because of the aspect is that it just continues on and goes further, and the nice thing about coming up with creative and innovative type of ideas is that you're fed all the information, and there's so much out there in the community, in every community. So your question is, what do I hope to accomplish this next year? Well, I suppose in the first year, you may say perhaps we've gone quite far. However, I tend to believe we're still at the initial stages. There's so much we can do and provide. However, for next year, I want certainly the website to become recognized as a primary source and a focal point for information in the community. And as I touched upon just a few minutes ago, a French version of the website will be implemented for Franco-speaking installations. Now, this is important because a little bit of an issue at the moment, and that is I have all of the information, but really to get other people involved from an administrative point of view, because I'd like to pass this on. We do need a user and instruction manual. As we move from community to community, Steve, we will need also a best practice guide and best practices, and we'll find out as we go along what those are. And what is now important to me for the next little while is to work on this community assets model, so this assets-driven type of inventory where we're going to capture more resources than ever before in the community. So anyhow, those are my priorities on the next year that I'm looking towards.
And then what do you wish to accomplish, let's say, in the next 3 years?
You're certainly challenging me with the questions. I find, of course, that even with conversations with you I've had in the past, so probing and so intriguing and such a deeper understanding that I find myself learning as I go through some of your queries and some of your thoughts. But, a good question. Where will we be in the next 3 years? And I vision it in this way, is that I would hope as a minimal, we have at least 20 installations, and again, we're talking about small communities. I have four sort of in my pocket at the moment, and one of the problems that I am having is that, I need somebody to take over this prototype, this initial website, before I can move on. But notwithstanding, in 3 years, I hope to have at least 20 installations. And what I want to do, I guess the second one, would be to share assets between neighboring communities. So it's nice to have an assets-based inventory in my community, but gee, Stittsville, Canada, and the smaller communities around here, there's 15 of them around this particular region on the west side of Ottawa that I'm looking at. It would be nice to share those assets with neighboring communities. I want to develop templates for use in other communities. So the website at the moment, if you have a look at it, there are pages. The number of pages that I created, I think, are quite general. However, they are specific for CARP. For example, CARP dollars, things to do in CARP, businesses in CARP. Well, these can be used for templates for use in other communities, so I'd like to port them over to other communities. What I hope to do, too, is to do some profiling and data mining. Now, this goes back to that PLA question, is that through PLA, of course, we did do data mining and profiling. And what we want to do is to provide perhaps some intelligence, some hotel intelligence about our community, and perhaps provide that to the social service area, or provide that to the councillors or the mayor, or perhaps to the schools, or to the medical center. We will have an immense amount of data, I hope, in 3 years. And what I want to do is to do this profile and data mining. Another one would be to identify and build community innovations from, and we have what we call an idea generator page. So what an idea generator page is, and there's 20 of them up there at the moment, is community ideas for the community, what the community can do to sustainability, revitalize, etc. And I'd like to certainly build an innovation bank of these. I'd like to be recognized for community engagement, that word again, and become an asset provider. So that's what I'm currently working on, is community engagement and assets inventory. I would like, of course, as thinking widely, to receive some sort of national acceptance. And eventually, I know I will want to try and commercialize the community site. So if it does take off, if it does catch on, and I'm hoping within the next 3 years it will, is perhaps put some commercial aspect to it. At the moment, everything is free. I'm retired, and I'm providing this free at the moment. So that probably covers what I would like to see in the next 3 years.
You know, we talked about what you have in place today and where you want to be later this year and I guess in the next 3 years. So obviously there's gaps between where you are today and where you want to be. So how will you close those gaps?
Hope they didn't ask that question, but I guess I should be honest, shouldn't I? of course, we like to take the positives out of it. Is there any gaps? Is there any issues? Certainly. I've come across them. Some I didn't think would happen. Others I should have been aware of. And some I sort of knew when I got into this, what sort of problems that I would have. And we'll have a look at that. It covers all of those three aspects. I think at the moment I have a fairly well-designed technology prototype. And I say technology and concentrate on the technology side, and that's what I've been doing. It's kind of interesting, Steve, because when I first got into it, I didn't want to particularly do the technology. I've admitted to you is that I'm not particularly a website designer or developer. I'm not particularly a programmer. But I certainly have the skills to be able to do it. However, trying to find somebody that had the technology background was difficult, and hence I ended up doing it myself. And I think I certainly have learned a lot, and I believe the technology side is tight. But what's missing is sort of ongoing engagement and additional support from the residents. That is definitely missing. Already we track the hits and we find many residents come to the site but do not return regularly. I guess a catchphrase would be we've generated a buzz, but we don't have a sizzle yet, the wow factor. So as we move forward, we need continuous engagement with our website visitors. Our existing design is sort of a service model base, okay? Now, a service model is really based on perceived needs or perceived problems. So what has been happening is that the community sees a need and sees a problem, but we're responding to those problems and we're finding out it's not really a problem when we come down to it. So to concentrate on my website on perceived problems, I want actual real problems. So recently we've changed the model and we're now focusing on known assets in the community. Now, what's the difference between the two? Well, I'm using an example, and this is not necessarily true. The schools come to me and say that, gee, we have a bullying problem in our community with the school. We have a K-8 school here close in Carp, and bullying is a problem from an educational point of view in the schools. So the request is we'll put up a wiki page on your website and talk about bullying, okay? And we put up a wiki page, and this is a perceived need, what I would classify as a perceived need, and discussion takes place. And wow, we find out that there's a community expert out there that we didn't realize. And this community expert can not only answer the questions, but answer them professionally. Well, this page now is really not a very good page. There's been a lot of talk, there's been a lot of interest, and perhaps it's provided some support. But in actual fact, we have a community expert. Now, is that bad? No. But I've been throwing up pages and pages and pages and finding, based on perceived needs, that need was really never there. We could have gone to a particular source and found out how to solve the problem much more quickly. Knowing that these assets are available out there in the community, I think is a better approach, a more efficient approach. I'm not suggesting that I don't want to put up these pages. I'm just saying that perhaps a assets model is far better than a perceived needs model. So certainly that is a gap, and certainly that's what we're trying to address. Now, another gap, as I touched upon, is acquiring the technical support for the website. The website's manageable at the moment, but in order to move forward myself and implement new community sites, I need an additional resource person. The difficulty is really finding someone in a community who has the interest and technical ability, and perhaps even potentially appreciate what the site can do. Now, I am taking steps, of course, and one of them is a comprehensive user guide, maybe to facilitate some better understanding of the management of the website. However, this is a gap that I haven't been able to provide. There are people out there, there are people in Canada, which is this technical center of Ottawa, but again, these people are not available, nor particularly have an interest in the website at this moment. So they could be overcome, this gap, but a technical support person could be hired, or a sell-off of the existing prototype might be the possible answer. So it's a gap, and I certainly would like to address and move on to the next websites as quickly as possible. Now, another one is I feel that the main criterion behind the website was that the user could input directly into a web page. So again, remember, it's a wiki-based type of environment, and it allows no intervention by a web administrator, and all the content pages have an ad and a view page. Now, the ad page is filled in by the user, and in most circumstances, it automatically appears in the view page. Wonderful. The resident comes to my ad page, wants to put in the business directory his business. So he fills in an ad form, okay, asks the appropriate question, and immediately his business appears in the view portion of the website under business directory. Simple, really, really quite simple. And all it is basically an ad and a view for all of the pages. Now, it appears nothing's quite as simple as it sounds. I found that the user's not really always using the input form. In fact, probably I'm looking at 10% of them using the input form. Instead, what they do is send me an email and ask that the input be done for them, even though I think it's quite simple. So again, this bit of digital divide aspect, I suppose. So the assumption is that over time, I feel that the user will become more comfortable with the technology and perhaps eventually complete the input process. But at the moment, Stephen, it is certainly a gap. It is an issue. It's a problem for me. So as the site becomes more popular, certainly additional workshops where I will set up. I've done some of them, but I'll continue with them as we proceed over time.
Well, you've done a lot of work, and I can see, some of the challenges that you're facing, and you're, kind of working out solutions for them. So what do you want to do next?
So what do I want to do next? Yeah. The nice thing about what I'm doing in the community, not that I feel it's particularly altruistic, is that I feel it's within my control. I certainly can physically meet with the people. I can physically talk and have meetings. So it's not as if, when I wrote my book, I created a blog. However, it was virtual. It was out there in space. I didn't know what was going to happen, of course, with my blogs or with my books. It wasn't within my control. But I feel that the community, because I'm in the community, I have some control, and that's why I keep moving forward and say, I'm going to solve, first of all, some of these issues and these problems, and it's not beyond my control. I have control of it. So what will I do next? Well, certainly continue to work with the community. For example, we recently had a meeting with this parent-teachers council. Well, it wasn't on bullying. It was, in actual fact, on a math aspect. They found that they were having problems with math in the schools, that there wasn't enough resources. So what we have put up in, if you check the front page, is a math aid based on the Khan Academy, and we have 430 topics discussed. So again, sort of a need basis, we put up something. Now, just to give you an idea, Stephen, that Khan Academy, we worked with not Salman Khan, but one of his administrators, and got permission, of course, to put it up on our website. And there's 430 topics that we put up from K to grade 16. So it goes right through to college. Now, how long did it take me to put that page up, Steve? I calculated 200 hours of work. Now, more ideas just keep popping up by the minute. So usually once a request is forwarded, we implement it as a web page, and we decide on whether or not that web page stays up based on popularity. So we have certainly some statistics on each one of the pages. Now, we put up another page, and we find that it goes like a movie rating. So we have a movie rating. This is a 10 rating. This is a 9 rating. Oh, this is a 1 rating. We're going to drop that off and put on a new web page. Oh, that's only a 1 rating. We'll drop that one off. So the lower impact pages get dropped off. The higher impact pages stay on. Now, I'm still suggesting that this is based on perceived needs. We don't know whether, you know, this method is going to be popular. If it's not popular, if there's not any hits, well, we take it right off. Okay, so what will I do next? The work I'm going to do is definitely based on, in assets-based inventory. I am not going to put up a page until I know it is needed in the community, not only needed in the community, but based on the assets in the community. So say, for example, again, let me conjecture the idea with this math, is that we have 3 experts in the community who would be willing to provide math tutorials for the grade level of which the local school is having difficulty with. So we find those assets and we send these people to the school to volunteer and help the students. I think that would be a better answer than spending hundreds of hours in mounting, you know, this math aid, this Khan Academy. This, by the way, this math aid Khan Academy concept is a real winner. It's been taking off and it has more hits than any other page that I have. So that's a poor example of saying we're going to drop off the pages. But I certainly want to look at the assets model and I've just started. So that's pretty well where I will be going for the next little while.
You know, we've discussed in some detail this initiative with the community and this the implementation of the technology and how you're, you know, being this hub of an ecosystem and you're enabling all of this engagement. We're going to now sort of move to another topic area, and this is just to mine your expertise. You know, you have done many innovations in the past. You've taught in the space for many, many years and recognized as a thought leader. So let's mind that experience for something like, you know, what are your views on some of the upcoming disruptive innovations?
Very good. Yes, I certainly have got a bee in my bonnet for disruptive innovations. I certainly have done research on disruptive innovations, looked at many aspects of it, and there's 2 terms, of course, and we have to be a little bit careful. There's disruptive technologies and disruptive innovation. So disruptive innovations to me is not, it's not a breakthrough technology. More so it's sort of a transforming agent to make things and new ideas more affordable and efficient, convenient and available to a larger population. I really think this website does that. It's important though, I believe, that disruptive innovations be a positive force, force for the future of the community, for the future of society and even mankind, if I could use that in a general type of term. So there's certain disruptive, innovative breakthroughs I see happening that is important to me. And as I was researching and looking at collaborative websites, I came across a number of terms, and all of them are really related to disruptive innovations, things such as crowdsourcing and open innovations and open sources and wiki-based types. So all of it, to me, is a disruptive innovation. So let me highlight the ones that are important, I believe. Well, the first one I'd like to pick on is healthcare. And healthcare really has moved into the disruptive innovation type of era. It has the potential really to decrease costs and improve both the quality and accessibility of health. And that is happening more and more all the time. And just as a side note, Stephen, is that there's a chap, maybe I should just mention the last name, Dr. Bruce, who's the head of our medical center here in our community. And I've had numerous discussions with him on some of the innovations that's coming out of the health area. So again, as you research these things, we've got assets out there. We've got real people out there that you can discuss it with. So Dr. Bruce is certainly one of them. A second one that's very important to me is the new research into education. And most of it is aimed at sort of changing the legacy factory models into more student learner centers. And this enables sort of the students to realize their full potential based on different learning styles and certainly it's something I did with Learning Knowledge Framework. The learning, different learning styles and readability index and aspect is very important in education. Is that we all don't learn the same way and we don't learn at the same speed, mainly because we are not at the same reading level. So education, new research aimed at that is important to me. Now, I did mention crowdsourcing and open innovation, and I think that will allow people from certainly different cultural and economic and educational backgrounds to collaborate. And that what is happening with low-carbon economies, and there's a lot of innovations in that area utilizing certainly this crowdsourcing for different and creative ideas. You asked me for five, so the fourth one would be, again, very important, is collaborative learning and educational initiatives. And the one I like that's up and running and very successful is Google Apps. And Google Apps, of course, one of the elements is for participatory studying and learning anytime and anywhere. And I believe this has enormous type of potential. It's just beginning. It's just a touch of the iceberg. The last one that, again, is part of my research took me to, and I'm really enthralled with this one, is John Hopkins. And, again, if your audience wants to look at some of the work that he's doing on creative economies, a bit of a buzzword and perhaps a new terminology not known to many people, but creative economies is sort of the human creativity. Now, John Hopkins believes this is the ultimate economic resource. So my assets-based model is I am saying that my economic resource is the people, the creativity, and the imagination of people in the community. So the creative economy aspect is, I think, intriguing. It really applies open-source information and sharing of ideas to boost growth and social and cultural development. And, again, I do believe that a website is an example of this.
Now, you've done so much work, and you've done a lot of thinking in terms of, as in the prior question, disruptive innovation. But you must encounter, through all of the interactions that you have, areas of controversy. So can you talk about that more?
Yes. Yeah, I certainly have come across some different types of issues and controversy. The first one is no doubt in my mind. I have and have had a lot of problems with even the language. For example, what do we really mean by community? Well, you're an IT expert, Stephen. What does community mean to you? Well, it certainly probably is different than what I intend to lend a meaning to in my collaborative websites. Do you know that there's over 95 definitions of community? Oh, my, interpretations and definitions of community and how it's used. This work was actually done by a fellow called David Hillary, and he found 95 separate definitions of the term community. So the use of the word collaborative, community, what is it I'm trying to do? And I try to sort of capture it with the title of my website, but is that really meaningful to people who are, first of all, perhaps doing searches, and people who are trying to understand what I'm doing? No, because community to you possibly means something very different to our audience than the way that I'm using. So the language is problematic. Now, the second one is understanding the issues and sort of accepting the proposed solution. Now, I believe this is coupled with, when you come up with an innovation, trying to grapple with the issues and sort of accept a solution or a suggestion on what it could be is a problem. But more so is a paradigm shift, I believe, and involves a moderate degree of technology. Now, this in CARP, I don't know if it's in all communities, is really a cause of confusion. As soon as you start talking technology speak, they really have problems understanding the issue and accepting the solution. Oh, computers, I don't want to touch computers. I don't want to get involved in computers. So that, to me, is an area of controversy. Now, the third one is collaborative communities, in actual fact, does oppose individualistic nature. of people, of culture and society. For the most part, we are individuals. We are unique. And that individual aspect is, most of the day, we work with that. We work with ourselves. The collaborative community aspect, yeah, you go to work and you're supposed to be collaborating and working together for a common good and a common goal, a business goal. But it's in a bit of an opposition to people. So when I suggest that we're going to, in the community, work collaboratively, the answer I get is, why? Why bother? Everything's working fine. I've got enough problems. I've got enough questions. Why should I work collaboratively in our community? Well, I'll address that a little bit later on. It is important, and it's possibly the future of many of the inner cities and the problems that we're facing today. Now, a fourth issue is safety. I've provided a wiki-based environment for this collaboration. It brings up all sorts of problems. It could be misused. It's open source, the safety aspect. I was in a meeting in which the head of the police force in our area is called West Carlton, is the municipal area, and she addressed a concern about my website with regards to the safety aspect and how I was going to solve that. And the last one is engagement. How do I engage the citizens in the community when they feel there is no urgency for change? Why should we be involved? Why should we go to your website? Why should we provide our skill set? Is this not private? Well, of course, they don't have to put in their skill set if they don't want. Businesses are interested. They want to be listed in the inventory. But a lot of people don't want to come to the website to do the things that I'm asking to do. So the engagement is certainly a question. Now, you did ask any proposal, any suggested solutions with this. The first issue, language and understanding, I think it's just a simple matter of education and bridging this technology divide. It's up to me, I think, to solve that. And again, I've mentioned that it's in my control. And I think certainly the first two are under my control. Now, the last three, certainly for me, they're problematic. And the last one, the engagement one, is, I think, more difficult than any of the others. The safety issue one, I've addressed by, at the moment, having ongoing sort of monitoring of the website. Admittedly, I've been doing most of it myself. Every day, twice a day, I check for new pages and new content in my website. Well, I've got a group in CARP, and it's called the Historical Society, and they've indicated that they will take over multiple pages. So in other words, they've identified a person who will look at page one, another person page two, and I'm asking them to check the content from a safety point of view on a regular basis, twice a day. Now, the Historical Society, as the term implies, are usually retirees who belong to the Historical Society who want, of course, to maintain the history of CURP. So they're seemingly willing to do that. At the moment, though, surprisingly, I'm pleased, there's been no safety concern. And all I feel is that, particularly from a policing point of view, that due diligence is really required. Now, having these volunteers in place who agree to monitor a single page on a daily basis is certainly the answer. Now, you know, the idea of this whole website is working together. It's a collaborative approach. And I think this is a learned behavior, and the community will eventually attach themselves to this website. It's a matter of time. It seems to be catching on and progressing. And more so, it does have positive implications where participating, sharing, adds a social value. The convincing argument to me is the sum of the parts is greater than the whole. In other words, is that if we work individually, participate individually, that sum will be greater than the whole in the final result. Now, the engagement issue has been certainly a challenge, and it's forced me to review and at times redesign the structure of the web pages. The website is still, the technology part is still intact, but I keep changing the structure, and I'm not quite sure if I have it correct yet. I'll keep working on that, and certainly the next ploy is to work with this assets-based. Now, the more feedback we receive from the residents, the easier it will be to accommodate and engage participants. At the moment, I'm receiving some, but I don't think nearly enough. I hear statistics such that you can expect, really, when you put up a website, that 1% of the residents or 1% of the people in that community, whether that community be Facebook or that community be Twitter, you can only expect 1% of the community to get involved. Well, I guess if I take 1% of 1,500, that's the population of the cup, I'm probably getting more than that. I'm probably getting 2 or 3% on a regular basis, but I still feel it has a long, long way to go. So I hope that answers your questions on the controversy of the work that I'm doing, Steve.
You know, it's just fascinating. You definitely have thought through a lot of these situations and issues. And let's kind of broaden the question then, and you know, taking sort of this angle, what improvements in policy do you think should happen in the next years, and what would you like to see internationally?
Yes, a good question. Part of my answer is wrapped in when I first decided to take on the website. I really wanted to analyze and decide if there was a need for the website. The businesses, organizations, associations said there was need, and it seemed obviously because of the misinformation that was going around, it was needed. But when I looked into it a little more carefully, I realized sort of that the climate was ideal for the implementation of what turned out to be a collaborative community site. And the reason for this is that finding solutions to urban and rural social problems has been sort of a political priority in many American and European countries, and particularly this last decade. There's been problems with urban and rural social problems. Now, in Ottawa and a lot of Canadian cities, the amalgamation of smaller outlying communities and creating what we call a megalopolis of urban centers is one attempt in solving social issues. For example, CARB is part of the Ottawa municipality. And although I'm a little bit contrary to it, the government of Ottawa decide that through a centralized approach, they can control the problems and the issues in the outlying areas. I'm not quite sure that is what's happened. Ask me the question is, did I ever think I would get involved in the social sciences? A year ago, Stephen, I would have said never, and now I'm into it like, wow, you know, no stopping me because I voiced my opinion at a lot of these meetings. Now, national and sort of local governments have made a variety of attempts to develop integrated and partnerships approaching, you know, things such as poverty, social exclusion, and I guess other related problems. Now, I find that too many cities, example, Detroit, are even unable to, you know, support the outlying areas, let alone the inner city. They do have problems. So world cities and even countries are suffering the consequences of a passive recipient state-funded service. And most of the mentality around at the moment is, what can you do for me? Oh, we have a problem in our municipality, in our community. Hey, government, what are you going to do for me? And that mentality has to change. I think the mentality that has to change is we need a proactive approach led by empowered citizens. I mentioned I bring that word up again. So we need to empower the citizens to solve some of these problems. So, you know, our economic crisis is worldwide. We all know and hear about it. And local governments come under great pressure. I realize that. And it's against this backdrop of unemployment and poverty and social exclusion. The need really is for new ideas and strategies led by citizens of the community who take control in a democratic and inclusive way and utilize localized assets more effectively. So if the audience is hearing me correctly, I believe I built this all into this website. In the final analysis, I think it's a need to create policies aimed at promoting social inclusion through collaboration. A community develop initiative that puts citizens sort of in the driver's seat. And this new initiative generally will empower the citizens and the abilities and insights of local residents to become resources for solving their own problems. I'm not implying that the troubled communities don't need outside help, but rather I'm trying to impress is that local initiatives must be citizen-led with outside agencies acting in a very supportive but limited role. The website that we developed acts as a platform where local initiatives can be identified and launched, viewed, and discussed collaboratively. And the aspect of policies or any changes, I feel, will come from within. So one, I could say, from a database point of view, is going with a new model of many to one. Many will support the one before one was supporting the many. And that's where we're headed, I think, with this collaborative website.
Now, Richard, let's expand this even further. From all your extensive writing, seminars, and work, can you share some stories?
Well, thank you for the opportunity, Stephen. I certainly can, and I hopefully that these stories that I have is amazing and as inspirational to your audience as they were to me. And I'll pick on three. Now, the first one was certainly significant to me from a social media point of view, and I find that today that the social media and the internet can unleash unlimited power. At a touch of a keyboard or a mouse, we can access an amazing amount of information and interact with people, and this has certainly been significant to me, that the potential that anybody and everyone in the world is accessible. Now, on September the 9th, 2011, I tried an experiment. It's an important date, and as you can recall, and I'm sure your audience will as well, I tried an experiment, and this experiment was based on Twitter, the social media. Now, I realized that the average person uses Twitter has 140 friends. I, again, researched this, found this out, and what I wanted to do was, through an experiment, test out what I could find by using an act of kindness. And this act of kindness was a question that I posed to my Twitter friends. So what was this question? I asked my friends to make a positive comment to the first person that they would meet today. So again, let's frame that, is that I had certainly over 140 friends, about 300 at the time, and what I asked all of my friends is, would they send out a posting based on a act of kindness? Now, where did I come up with this? Well, it was in one of my books, a self-help book, and acts of kindness is certainly one of the things that I depend on for maintaining connections and working with people. So the experiment went as follows, is ask and certainly suggest to your friend, what positive comment can I gain by posing a question? So each of my Twitter friends was informed of this and was informed that it was an experiment. And the question was basically, do one act of kindness today and see what the result is. Now, I wanted to know what the result turned out to be. So I asked if their Twitter friends would return a click to me and come to my account, and on my account I had a thumbs up icon. Interestingly, Stephen, I got over 2 days more than 14,000 clicks over a 2-day period. I found this really quite amazing, is that generated from one tweet based on an act of good that I could impact more than 14,000 people. So it was quite an impressive story, I believe, anyhow. Now, a second one I'd like to highlight is related to my first book, Turning the Self Inside Out. Now, as the case is with many first published books, I was sort of discouraged with the number of sales. I had visions that thousands would buy my book, and I would appear on Oprah one day, where is Richard living? However, I really thought that would happen one day with my book. But during this time, I received a call, and it sort of was a cold shower and brought me back to reality after I heard from this person and realized the importance of what I was doing, and certainly selling thousands of books and going on Oprah wasn't the be-all and end-all. She told me that the book had a tremendous impact on the future decision of her two children. In actual fact, one of the children was in teaching and was thinking of leaving it. And after reading the book, it was a female, she decided to continue on with a teaching career because of the importance. And one of the aspects of the book is the different types of professions and what it is, what it means to the rest of the world and what it means to people. But she finished her story by saying, "If you never sold another copy of your book, Richard, you've already made a significant difference in this world." And final comment was, "Thank you for sharing your wisdom." Well, right away I realized the importance of quality and not particularly quantity. So I certainly have kept that close to me as I see the number of sales go from 1 to 5 a month. Still very small, but I keep saying, well, there's quality out there and not quantity. Now, there's many more inspirational stories I could mention, and perhaps you give me a heads up, Stephen, on a new book, but let me pick one more story that was both coincidental and interesting. Back in 2002, I was a presenter at IFIT World Congress, as you recall. With my interest in work with Generation Y, during the Congress, I was asked to join a panel discussion on youth and the digital divide. There were some well-known dignitaries and personalities on the panel, and it turns out that one of the people on the panel, and I was paired with him, was Justin Trudeau. The event was important, of course, and important to me, and I was thrilled to spend time with the son of a former Prime Minister, Pierre Elliott Trudeau. And at the time, Justin was studying, if I remember correctly, at Polytechnic Montreal. And interestingly, I had lunch with him, and over lunch he discovered my interest in math and knew that I was a math teacher, and he certainly didn't hesitate to ask my help in solving a calculus problem. Here I am at the World Congress helping a future Liberal candidate for Prime Minister, and as I look back, wow, I know what Justin is doing today, and I've often thought, wonder if I should let him know what I'm doing right now. I'm sure he's not interested, but an interesting story and an intriguing story.
Now, Richard, you've taken us on an sort of an amazing journey through your discussion of what you've been doing leading up to this point, your work with communities and this collaborative sort of system that you've created, and then some stories that you shared, and talking about some of your views on some of the important disruptive nations around the world. We're down to our last question. And in this one, I sort of turn the tables and by asking you, if you were conducting this interview, what questions would you ask, and then what would be your answers?
First of all, a comment. You've exhausted me, and you certainly asked all the questions I could possibly think of. I suppose if I had to ask three other questions, certainly less probing and less reflective and less important than the questions that you've asked, Stephen. But let me attempt with three of my own questions and see where it goes. The first one is, we haven't really touched upon, but important to me, and I am passionate about it, is a synopsis of my website. So the question could be is, give us a brief synopsis of your website. Just briefly discuss it. Of course, I could talk another hour or so, but I won't. The entry point, really, to the website is through a portal. And this portal is called youcreateit.ca. So that's you, letter U, createit.ca. Then from there, the visitor can go to various communities, and at the moment, based on my early conversation, of course, we can only go to one, which is called carpsite.ca, so that's carpsite.ca, and that's our prototype that we're working with. The portal can really be compared from mine, this is the analogy that I use out there when I'm discussing it, to a train station with travelers departing for various destinations. So obviously Carpsite is one of the destination. Now, at the portal at the train station, there's often much to see and do. But what happens at our portal? At our train station, well, we have a general service announcements for all communities. So what I capture in the portal is information about the breadth of all communities that I'm going to bring on board. Now, also, there's daily puzzles to play. There's TV listings, local TV listings, so at the moment it's for Ottawa. This math tutorial that I mentioned, the Khan Academy, and a daily horoscope. It's an interesting place for all to visit, and even more interesting when you hear the comparison of the hits that we're getting. Of course, though, it's not the purpose of the website to have people sort of linger there and solely on this homepage and leave the website before they hit the community site. But this homepage does have the advantage of attracting many visitors. And if for nothing else, I suppose, it's certainly received the hits that I would like to see eventually on all of my community sites, because we're getting approximately, well, at least 25,000 hits per month on the portal side, on the homepage side. So that's quite significant. Now, once you leave the portal, you depart and you begin your journey. The community selection, so you select the community, and at the moment it's CARP. So each community site is designed to provide the stronger connections within the community. I believe it's the main purpose of these community sites is, first of all, to inform the students about the availability of important services. Now, there's much more going on, but certainly that, to me, is the main purpose, is the information that's provided. So there's many pages on the community site. However, unlike the traditional websites that you see, where content is added by a web administrator, this website allows the user to input directly into a web page. So all visitors to the site can advertise and view events. There's lists of activities and services and specific sale items, and all this is for free. On most pages, there's an ad and a view selection. And all of it is really driven in a very simple, easy-to-understand view. So really, I do believe that this is a type of website where everybody can engage on, find it easy to use, and certainly very rich in content. The second question, let's move on, is perhaps I'd like to respond to is, how does collaboration actually take place in this website, and has it been successful? Well, let's look at the back end first. Has it been successful? It's certainly not been easy. CARP, until quite recently, was an agricultural center, and just the suggestion of a website, let alone online collaboration, is a frightening thought for most of our long-term residents, and there's new residents moving in, and the community is building. But for our long-time residents, it certainly is a scary type of proposition. Now, awareness and acceptance are key to the success of the project, and we're trying various marketing approaches. The numbers are increasing on the CARP site, and I would say steadily increasing. I will continue to work on it until I feel I've captured a good base of the communities. We do realize that collaboration is a team effort and requires an environment that is positive and supportive to all of the participants. And our collaboration takes place on a wiki-based platform, as I mentioned, that's monitored to ensure safety for the participants who contribute dynamic informational content. And as we know, they do it in a very easy fashion. We endeavor to empower, this is the key thing, we want to empower our community residents in a democratic manner and seek online consensus. Well, why is the use of democratic? I guess the people power sometimes is misused, and I certainly don't want to see that on this particular website, is that it has to be democratic, and there will be some monitoring going on to ensure that, you know, it's for the benefit of all and it's for the better cause. My third question, Steve, is a closing marketing type of ploy on my part, but you have a wide audience out there, and I certainly would welcome any feedback, any comments and suggestions, negative or positive or otherwise. It's been a growing and learning time for me, and I really very much value any input that you and the audience can provide. So please send me an email. The email is administrator@youcreateit.ca. So administrator@letteryoucreateit, all one word, .ca, of course. Or just phone me personally at 613-470-0137. And again, many, many thanks for this opportunity, Stephen.
Well, thank you, Richard. And I guess I should add that your number is really country code.
Right, of course.
1 and then 613-430-0137.
Thank you for that correction.
So, Richard, thank you for sharing so much. I mean, you've done so much. It's a remarkable sort of journey you've led, and it looks like your capping achievement is what you're working on right now. It's just amazing.
Thank you so much, Stephen. And I know, compared to perhaps numbers in your audience and yourself, giving back and providing is so important. And knowledge, the knowledge that you have and the knowledge base that can be shared with other people is certainly important to me.
Now, Richard, I know you have a really demanding schedule, and you've done so much, and we're very much indeed fortunate to have you come in and do this interview. So thank you for sharing your many deep experiences with our audience.
And thank you very much, Stephen, for all that you provided in the past and the present, and I've appreciated the time with you.
So I want to conclude by saying I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this is our exclusive interview with Richard Longworth, a leading disruptive thinker, educator, community advocate, Wix website developer, writer, blogger, and just so much more.